Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Bonjour.
Indeed. How's things going, gentlemen?
Lovely. How are you?
Good, thanks. We're joining you live on Amplify, ampli.fi/guitar nerds, coming live from quite dreary Brighton in the UK.
But it was sunny. I wore my cool Hawaiian shirt this morning. Yeah. And you know, I had to get picked up from work.
Really?
Because it was raining so much. That was quite convenient because I bought a Hiscox bass case.
And they are notoriously heavy.
Heavy.
It's all gone a bit wrong weather-wise. Mm. And depending on your point of view, mood-wise in the UK. So thanks for joining us on ampli.fi/guitar nerds. And we're going to just chat about some cool guitar stuff, try and lift everyone's mood.
Oh my God. But on the upside, if there is an upside to this ridiculous hunk of an island, but NAMM. It's not a soft day. I always do
NAMM.
That. NAMM. Summer NAMM 2016.
Indeed.
Is one of the best NAMMs I think we've seen in a long time. Mainly for me, because there's been loads of really cool bass announcements.
Loads of cool bass stuff.
They've been cool guitars, cool basses, and cool effects. And
do you know, also
cool
lots
amps.
Of new amps.
Yeah. Loads of new amps. Yeah. Yes.
Loads of like weird boutique, loads of boutique companies. I think they're kind of like, they get a bit more of a chance to shine at Summer NAMM.
Definitely.
Yeah. Some weird, like, there's some that are so secret that we don't even know all the information on as well, which is quite exciting.
Indeed. Some stuff that was kind of just there, but is not necessarily released yet. So, thanks for joining us. We're going to talk a lot about Summer NAMM, but let's just do a little quick catch up. Matt Knight, what have you been up to this week?
I built some pedal boards.
Yes, I saw this.
It's an ongoing thing. People keep asking me to do it and then handing me money in payment for services.
Oh, I need
so
to
I just
get you to
keep
do
doing it.
One for me as well, actually.
I might need you to do something for me related to this.
Why would you need
because
a pedal board?
I've got something to tell you, which I'm not going to do on air.
Right.
Little secret. No, it's nothing that good. I'm just buying something.
What are you buying?
I can't tell you yet.
But you notoriously buy things that you don't actually need to use because you play in a punk band.
That's the guitarist way.
Yeah, that's of course. Well, I don't play guitar in a punk band. I play guitar at home. I play bass out and about, and you'll notice that I've got no pedals whatsoever. I don't even have an amp. I've got a head,
you
but
don't
I don't have
an
a
amp.
Cab.
Yeah, you've got some
amp, bass fly rig. That's what you need.
Indeed. Yeah, just need a... Yeah, that'll do it. I don't even need that. I just need a tuner. And most of the time, I don't even do
bass,
that.
Oh, the bass fly rig is out now, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, awesome
think,
bit of kit.
If anyone hasn't checked out the Sansamp range of those, because the fly rigs, they do the fly rig, they've got the Richie Kotzen signature fly rig, and they've got the bass fly rig now. They are the best... The best idea. I can't believe how compact they are for actual Sansamp stuff. There's nothing better.
But the bass one's pretty full on, like pre and post compression, EQ, the full Sansamp in there,
octave drive,
fuzz, and chorus.
Yeah,
it's and an XLR out.
Everything you need. I'm gonna get one. Not even though I have a massive pedal board, and that's fine for everything that I need. I still want one just in case. Why not? Mm. I mean, they are quite expensive.
I think the only oversight on the guitar one is no in and out insert for other pedals.
Right.
I think that's such a shame.
So you should have basically had an effects loop in the effects.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would have made more sense because someone's bound to have like a drive pedal or something that they want to use.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's great that on the bass one they actually put a tuner because that is the one thing you're missing on the guitar one.
Oh, yes. Really? And there's no tuner on it.
Yeah.
So you would have
but
to...
the bass one that, looks awesome.
If you were playing guitar, that couldn't really be the only pedal that you take with.
Yeah,
you'd
it could.
You'd have to take a tuner.
Yeah, no, you'd just get a pitch.
You could just get a pitch clip. You're right.
Not a pitch clip. What's the proper one called?
The TC Electronic one. Yeah. The pitch thing. The Matt Knight.
Polyclip.
Polyclip. That's the one. Indeed.
I've left mine in my band van and
can't find it.
Yeah.
I need to get one, really.
Get one.
I don't have a clip-on tuner at the moment.
But they are very good.
I know. I should rectify that, definitely.
I've got three.
What?
I don't know why.
You've stolen Joe's one, that's why.
That is
I haven't stolen Joe's one. I've got two. I've always had two. And then I left one, and I desperately needed one when I came down to do videos last, so I had to buy a Korg pitch clip, which is also great. So now I have two polytunes and a pitch clip.
Nice. I need to get on that. I need to maybe buy the... I don't really need the top expensive one. I'll just get the pitch clip.
The polyclip
is still the best one.
The polyclip is the one.
Okay. Maybe I'll look into it. Just worth mentioning, if you are watching live, obviously the chat is open. Do drop us your Summer NAMM questions or chat about anything that we're talking about tonight. There's a few people in there already saying hello, which is cool.
People have been saying that the new Amply.fi iOS app does seem a lot better since the update, which is great. It actually seems a bit better for us as well. I can see and hear Matt Knight, whereas in previous weeks we've just been guessing at what he's been saying.
We had to go and dub it in afterwards. It was weird. Strange.
It was all me. I did all the
just
voicing.
Everything. You are the quite the ventriloquist.
Thank you.
So Matt Knight, so you've been building pedal boards. What have you been like? What sort of pedal boards? What kind of size you've been doing?
So this is I suppose the equivalent of a pedal train 2 sort of size.
Okay.
And it's for a guy in the Facebook group. I've done some stuff in before, and this is like his general all-purpose pedal board, which has, I'm just having a look at it now, 6 drive pedals. Yeah, because that's how many you need.
Of course.
Why six?
Actually, 5 drive pedals and a boost. Actually, an amazing selection of drive pedals. TC Flashback and Vortex. Free the Tone Chorus, which we have done in Guitar Nerds, which sounds amazing.
We have.
And the Keeley 30 milliseconds, which is their auto double tracker, Abbey Road sort of thing. I think they actually
I didn't know about that. That sounds amazing.
I really, really like the...
So it's just
like a reverb, chorus, delay, double tracker sort of thing all in one. Sounds amazing. Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know why double tracker pedals aren't sort of more established thing.
I guess most people do it with delays, and you know, if you can get a delay where it's got some decent modulation in, you're getting a kind of similar effect. I guess that's all the double tracker.
Electro-Harmonix
really
did one in the 70s called the ADT, I think. It was a massive pedal. It's just like 30 milliseconds of delay.
Yeah. What in terms of patch cables and stuff, what have you been using?
Been using Lava. Now I use George L's on all of mine, but it's just because solderless patch cables are expensive, so once you build up like a half decent collection of things, you kind of don't really want to change the brand that you're using. But I've been doing Lava for all of these, and they are actually some of the best ones. They have a really, really solid connection. I think every cable I put together works straight away. Like some other solderless kits, like either the cable's too bulky or the ends are too bulky, or every time you try and put one together, like half the time it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So these ones are, you know, really solid. And I had to wire it in such a way, I wired a buffer underneath and then had to wire it in a way that it could be easily changed for 4 cable method as well. So depending on what amp he's using, you can plug it straight in, or you can unplug one lead and then basically plug in a different one and it will go 4 cable as well. So
That's something that people don't often build into pedal boards, because obviously, you know, if you've got your pedal board and you know what amp you're using all the time, you wouldn't really need that sort of thing. But like on your board, you've got like a external effects loop built into the board, is that right?
Yeah, and the ES8 is wired up in a way that you can run 4 cable sort of fairly easily.
Yeah.
But it was quite good with this, because actually it gave me a chance to try the board in mono, try the board in stereo, and try the board with 4 cable. And I was kind of like, because 4 cable is something I don't do a lot, but it made a huge difference when you're using something like the Suramp with loads of gain.
Yeah.
How much better modulations and delays like sit in the mix.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that a lot of people miss. And I've for a long time, I was always like, no, just plug everything straight in. It sounds better. But actually, if you use a lot of gain on the amp, four cable makes all the difference.
Yeah,
it really does.
I was noticing that even without gain, or you know, a lot of gain, I've been editing the Pedal of the Week videos that we shot a few weeks back, and the stuff that we put in the effects loop of the two note system that we use sounds absolutely incredible. Just sounds like so. There's so much more depth and warmth to it, rather than going in the front end. Just sounds great. Really nice.
I just really like that Laclean. Like if I had a more basic amp with a half decent power amp, I'd be tempted to buy one of those and put it on my board with the MIDI and then just power amp straight out into a straight into a power amp.
I think anyone who's doing like home recording and stuff, like just get one of those and the Torpedo cab and you're kind of set for a really good recorded sound. As we've been saying, like we've been trying to massively improve the tone of the Pedal of the Week videos.
I think they're great now. I think they're as good as they almost need to be.
Yeah, they're kind of as good as if you... And in fact, someone asked on the Facebook group, I think, like, why do we not mic up an amp for this? And it's... We just couldn't do it justice. You know, like, we live in Brighton. Mm. Flats are quite small. You struggle to get an amp up to kind of non-neighbour... to like a neighbour-friendly volume, you know.
It's funny though, because I've certainly watched, you know, and followed a lot of other guitar and pedal related sort of YouTube channels, and I think ours sound, you know, just as good as some of the other ones out there. People actually micing stuff up and going through expensive preamps, and actually I kind of feel that by going through a slightly cheaper system, as it were, you're kind of maybe doing a little bit more justice to people hearing it through like laptops, and kind of rather than going, oh, we're miking up with a £6,000 microphone into a £4,000 preamp, you know. It's kind of a little bit more realistic in its terms of its budget as well.
I mean, listening through, you know, firstly putting something up on YouTube and, you know, listening through a laptop speakers on your phone is kind of like a neutralizer for that anyway. So I think as long as you've got a half decent tone going in, which I think the two notes does very, very well. It's, you know, that's as good as they need to be, really. And I'd love to be miking stuff up just kind of for our own amusement. The two note stuff sounds cool. I'm really pleased with how the new videos have come out. So, highly recommended. Two notes, get the thumbs up. Joe Branton, what have you been up to?
A few things happened.
Okay.
Other than depression. I bought an amp.
What did you buy?
I bought an amp.
Do you not follow our Instagram account, Mark?
Follow it. I know, really. I'm playing the role of the listener and questioning what Joe Branton's bought.
An amp? Yeah, I bought an Ashdown.
Okay.
So I bought a bass amp for people not interested in bass.
Let's not make this too lengthy, because we've had some feedback that bass guitars are boring this evening. So, yes, go on.
All right, so I bought an Ashdown. I went for the ABM head, the ABM 600 head, which is the newest model in Valve preamp 500 watt heads from Ashdown, which is really good, really great, like a marked improvement on the 500 series that came before. Even though all the controls are kind of the same, it still has the same like a three band EQ with the additional two extra controls, so four extra controls in total for low mids and high mids. Still has the onboard compressor octava, they don't call it an octava, do they? It's like a sub harmonic.
Yeah, that's what they've,
it's like a sub harmonic.
They've had it on those amps forever, haven't
it's,
they
it's actually for the first time I've been listening to, I was playing it and I was like, it's not that bad, and they kind of have a bit of a ropey rep, the octava
foot switch.
Yes,
they do. Okay, fine, because I was going to say it's a bit of a weird choice to put the octave on an amp and then not be able to turn it off. That really work for live performance.
Foot switch, so you can foot switch. They also have a valve drive on there that just heats up the 12 AX7s on the front end. But so they've got the valve drive, the compressor and the octave all foot switchable, which is quite cool. So it's a bit of a sort of multi-effects all-in-one amp head. I'm not going to use any of those, but actually I have plugged it in at home and sort of turned it down for home use, and actually just having a compressor on the head is a nice touch for home use. So I think,
well, because you might not necessarily want to plug in your pedal board if you're just playing in the living room or something.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the head is great, but it's very much Ashdown's like bread and butter amp head. So that's kind of the most standard thing I got. The really interesting thing that I've got is the first of two to come, custom built Ashdown Classic Series 15. Single 15s.
Okay.
So I'm getting two single 15s in 410 housings.
Okay.
So they're oversized housings with a 15-inch speaker in their cotton wool lined cabs.
Just imagine the fella in the Ashdown factory going, oh, for God's sake. Why have you let this maniac decide what to build?
So, yeah, they're cotton wool lined cabs with a nice little sort of port at the underside.
Okay.
With red, a classic red mesh. There'll be a picture of it on our Instagram account at the moment.
Which is
Guitar Nerds.
At Guitar Nerds, yeah.
Check that out. It's really cool. I could not be happy with it. It sounds like the 1970s. It's so woolly and thuddy, and it has so little definition. I absolutely love it.
It sounds like the worst bass amp ever.
Oh, I love it. I've been playing my bass six with like some cloth underneath the bridge.
Have you got flat wounds on your bass six?
No, not at the moment. I changed to round wounds. I'm going to put flats back. I'm thinking about flats making
a
reappearance.
Do you just hate treble?
Yeah, not really. Not really a big fan of it. I just really love John Paul Jones.
That's about that bass.
Yeah, it's all about that bass. So anyway, so that happened. So I'm really, really happy with that Ashdown amp. And I was a little bit like, because I was moving off of Orange. I've played Orange for years. And I was a bit like, oh, because sort of part of me's kind of moved to Ashdown's because I'm quite good mates with the guy, one of the fellas there. And I was like, I do really like their amps, but I know Orange inside out and I know that I'm happy with them. And I was like, oh, what if I've made a mistake?
Yeah.
What if I can't take it back? But actually, I sort of played that and I was like, oh, all those things that I thought just I couldn't, was like me not being able to make something sound right, was just that I don't think the Orange was quite what I was looking for.
It doesn't, the Orange stuff doesn't really do that really woolly type tone. It's
very
always got loads of grunt, mid-range grunt to it. So have you sold all your Orange stuff now?
Yeah, all the Orange stuff's gone.
On the Ashdown bus.
Fully Ashdown, yeah.
Okay, fully on the Ashdown Tour Bus 10, which is an amp that they do. Hilarious, what a joke. Cool, well, that's good. What else?
My girlfriend bought a guitar.
Okay, what did she buy?
She bought a Squire Vintage Modified Jaguar.
Okay.
In surf green.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because it's a super cool guitar.
Okay, and the only guitar you've got in your house is like a hand-built...
She's got a thin line telly
with a cello headstock. Bonkers, unbelievable.
So that's super cool as well. I spent the weekend with her at a studio. She was recording or writing some of her solo stuff with her like ridiculous Roland setup. She's got like loads of synths and a drum machine and some other bass synths, and she brought the Jaguar along as well. Sounds super cool. I forgot how trebly Jaguars are.
Yes.
How ridiculously brittle they are.
Particularly those pickups that they put in there.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of people, that's a common mod on those guitars, is to take them out and put in, you know, like a bare knuckle or Seymour Duncan or something.
They're Duncan design, the pickups.
They are, but they're quite bright. And obviously, you know, they're the Duncan design range are their Chinese range. Yeah, so there's something to be said for upgrading to the kind of
American made. I was really surprised though, because we borrowed my mate's old Vox AC30 with greenbacks in it, and it was still like the trebliest thing in the world, with like quite a relatively bassy amp like the AC30. It was still
AC30 is weird. You have to kind of watch that top end. It can get out of control sometimes, so maybe there was just dialing that back a little bit was the way forward.
That was about it. There's obviously a lot of the stuff I want to talk about are things that are in the NAMM news, because I've done some other stuff, but it's more interlinked with the NAMM news.
Interesting. Well, before we dive into the NAMM news, just want to say that if you are following us live on amply.fi/guitar nerds, do get in the chat. You know, you're part of the show as well now. Just chat along with us. But also, if you want to help us out, you can leave a donation on there as well. There's an option to, you know, drop us a dollar here or there to just help out with the show. Maybe perhaps buy Jay a new mug to replace this South Park one that's on his desk. Talking of Jay Cross, he's just joined us.
He has joined us. Give him time to sort himself out. He looked very sweaty and red-faced.
He's just done a gig, so he's going to drop in a sec. So should we dive into news?
I think we should dive into some new-bile.
Okay, good. So this is the news. So obviously, Summer NAMM this week is the, I guess it's the kind of B-tier NAMM show. It's in, Nashville?
How is it B-tier?
Nashville?
In Nashville.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not that I'm saying that the gear that has come out this year is B-tier, but historically it's been the smaller of the NAMM shows.
I tell you what, when this stuff started getting announced, I had to sort of like remind myself that this isn't the main
it's
one.
Not, it's not.
Because I was
Nam,
like,
Nam.
God, I don't like. I haven't really prepared for this. And there's no like build up to Nam no. and things. I'm normally like excited. Nam was like, oh, this one's just sort of happened. All this gear, and then I was like, oh yeah, it's not. It's not really the real Nam.
No, Summer Nam. So what normally happens is before Winter Nam, so the big one in California, you'll get a load of press releases and there's loads of hype about stuff, and some products will come out beforehand. Summer Nam's a bit different to that. It almost seems like, you know, like a regional guitar show.
Aphex Twin have turned up with their new Cheetah EP.
What?
So they've released an EP that you can only play on a certain device.
Okay.
It's some sort of...
What's this got to do with Summer Nam?
They've got a booth.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
How bizarre. So yeah, it's not, you know, your grand announcements from 300 and something companies or whatever are Summer Nam, but there's some cool stuff,
though, isn't there?
There is indeed. Should we dive into it?
Yes.
Okay, sounds good to me. So first up, the big F. Fender have announced a few new models: the Fender Mustang, the Mustang P90, and the Mustang Bass.
Good sweet Moses.
Classic model making a bit of a return. Well, let's start with the Mustang itself. I guess that's the kind of bass model. So, well, it's not the bass model. It's
the standard model.
The standard model.
It's not just that they've reintroduced something that we've been kind of gagging for. It's that they've actually also introduced it in loads of great colours. As well.
Yeah, so I've only I didn't have much time to put the show together. Jay, are you making a drink?
Just pouring some water out.
Okay, good. So yeah, I've only seen one picture actually, which is the Capri Orange, which looks
Merino
cool.
Red, I think it's the other one they're doing, and
Sherwood
no
Green.
Sunburst.
No, yeah, Sherwood Green. No. I think that's been. Let me say that again in case you missed it.
Sherwood Green. Indeed.
So the three colours again.
Capri Orange, Sherwood Green, apparently, and Torino Red?
How much is that just about the most mental range of colours for a standard line?
I'm surprised that they didn't go, you know, think about your traditional Mustang colours, which would be like Olympic White, Candy Apple Red, maybe like a Candy Apple Blue as well, I guess.
Oh, something boring. I'm a Fender and notorious for like boring standard lines, but this is actually a... really interesting.
There's nothing wrong with a bit of Candy Apple Red or Candy Apple Blue. Come on, that's an awesome colour. But I love what they've done. Capri Orange returning to the range. Yeah. That is cool. So Matt, what's the what the spec, and what do we know about it?
So Mexican built. I did have to confirm that. I wasn't sure, but definitely Mexican built, because they discontinued sort of loads of offset things a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And I think offset's always been an odd range for them. They've kind of never really known what to put where and kind of what model to make. So they've kind of gone, well, we did the Squire one, you know, and we've discontinued the other ones for a while. So let's go for Mexican built. Almost looks a bit, it's got like the Durasonic style pickups in it. Well, it looks at first I thought it was a Durasonic, but it's just that kind of Mustang design. But yeah, they look cool. Hardtail, maple neck, you know. Obviously slightly shorter scale. I think they're going for pretty much vintage through and through, really.
Yeah.
But kind of doing some sort of funkier colours.
That's why it's weird, because, you know, like the colours that they've chosen, like Capri Orange is from the 70s International series. It's like,
yeah,
what
along
a weird
with, what was
colour
that?
To choose.
What were the other colours in that?
Graffiti Yellow.
Oh,
yeah.
What colour.
And some other good ones.
There's that weird blue.
Yeah.
And Antigua Burst, was that part of the international colour?
Yes,
colour?
I think it
just
was.
A terrible colour. That's the
no,
worst
it's not.
Fender colour.
Mushroom Burst is not an awful colour. What are you talking about?
Mushroom Burst. It is a dreadful colour.
No, it's
colour.
Not. It's an amazing colour. Come on, they've got the baritone Jazzmaster is only available in Antigua.
Oh, no.
your inflection there was completely wrong. The baritone Jazzmaster is only available in...
I didn't realise that you guys were so tasteless.
Tasteless. Says the man
tasteless.
Who opted for a two colour sunburst. When you could have had any finish, you went for a two colour sunburst.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be called tasteless by someone that boring.
Jay Cross is here, everyone.
Hi, friends. Great. Hello. Sorry I'm late.
Well, you've been doing a gig, which we should maybe talk about in the Patreon.
Yeah, sure.
We're already deep in the news.
Yeah, so I hear.
So that's the standard Mustang, just regular kind of Durasonic style single coils. What about the Mustang P90? Is it exactly the same guitar but with P90s?
Yeah, rosewood neck, I think. I don't think there's a maple neck option with this one. Same price, about $449, so probably about the same in pounds. El Nico 5, P90s, metal control plate, so it looks more like a traditional Mustang, I suppose, apart from the P90s. And I think, I'm not 100%, they're also doing a humbucker version as well, with a single coil and a humbucker.
Yeah, they are.
Saw a picture of that, but then I saw a kind of press release-y type thing, and it didn't have that on there.
And I couldn't find any info about it, so okay. I'm not saying for definite, but yeah, basically Mustang P90s and then one with a set of Durasonic pickups.
Do we know what the P90s are? Are they Fender's own design?
Fender's own black P90s, sort of, though.
Yeah, I'm into it. Yeah,
they're not the Black Doves, though, which are the ones they put in the Jim Adkins? Yeah.
Yes.
The JA90. They're not the same pickups as that, by the looks of it.
I was really into those. But yeah, I'm into this new line. I'm glad to see Mustang's back. How about the bass? Yeah.
Well, the bass is quite interesting. I mean, a shame for them not to... Considering kind of how authentic they've made at least a couple of the options, it's a shame that they haven't gone for... They've gone for a more a common modded version of the Mustang bass, which is still super cool. And actually, I think if anything, it has made it far more applicable to modern use. The change that they've made is they've done away with the normal Mustang pickup, which is a tiny little split single coil pickup in a sort of plain
plastic.
Which
I found out was called the Tic Tac the other day. Right. I never knew that.
Makes sense. Yeah, I'm down with that. And they've swapped it out for a standard P bass and J bass pickup, so it's a PJ configuration, which isn't an uncommon mod. You see that a lot in old models that have been adapted to one or the other or both.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, so that you've got a pickup with a bit more output that's maybe, you know, a little bit more versatile than the Tic Tac, but. I still think a shame that they haven't just...
Well, the thing is, they did an accurate reissue for a long time. They did a Japanese one.
And they were very successful.
They were very successful, but maybe it's just time to kind of mix it up a little bit, putting some P-bass pickups in there.
This certainly is a good modern version. Making it PJ, I'm kind of a bit like... For me, PJ's always been the... we don't actually want to give this instrument any identity, so we'll give it a bit of both. It's sort of what I feel about the Jaguar bass. Where you've got, you know, the P bass, which has one pickup, the Jazz pickup, which has its two single coils, and then the Jaguar bass that just has a bit of both.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not its own thing.
The Jaguar bass, I think, has always been weird because, you know, they put like the active EQ in there and stuff, and it was just always a bit funny.
I didn't know what to do with it.
No.
And even like the Dimension bass has got its own individual pickup, which makes it unique and interesting. And just this, so having a sort of passive PJ is a bit like, well, so this is essentially just like a Jaguar bass for a short scale then.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a shame, but still very cool.
Yes, indeed. Good to see the Mustang back in various forms. So, Joe Branton, you've been dying to talk about this next item on our list, also from the Big F. I only saw this today, and do you want to announce what it is?
The Fender Flea Signature Jazz Bass.
Yes.
That's right. Because Flea has always had a jazz bass. Very much this is sort of Flea's Atom for Peace bass. Like, it's not Flea Chili Peppers. This is Flea Atoms for Peace, one of the best bands in the world, Atoms for Peace.
That doesn't mean anything.
Bass.
He did use this on some Chili Pepper stuff, though, didn't he?
Yes, he has. Like, yeah, it's on some Californication.
Okay.
He used it for all of Stadium Arcadium as well.
Okay.
But it's also on Atoms for Peace.
That album's rubbish, isn't it?
Yes, Stadium really rubbish. Arcadium. Yeah, it's the one they recorded live, and it's really, really rubbish.
Yeah.
Rubbish album. Anyway, it's also on Atoms for Peace, which, Amok, is an absolutely brilliant album.
They're good, or?
Really good, really
good.
Amazing.
Really? How good?
I'd say like...
This is the band with people from Musin as well, right?
Yes.
Isn't it?
You're just the cussing Joe Branton's
favourite. It is, though, isn't it?
Favourite people.
Radiohead.
Radiohead. That, the other one.
The other rubbish one. Anyway, so tell us about the Fender Flea Signature Jazz Bass.
So if you heard that Flea... Bear in mind, Flea's signature model... We've had the Flea Bass.
Yeah, awful.
And before that, we had the...
Modulus,
which was graphite, through neck bass with a humbucker in the bridge. The humbucker that was done in the same finish as the rest of the body.
Oh, yeah.
Then there's the Flea Bass, which came in such finishes as lime green with a pink scratch plate.
Yeah.
And were sort of a similar affair to the...
They were rubbish, weren't they?
Oh, they were
really
so
rubbish.
They were Flea's company that Flea essentially left and they went under. Sorry?
Weren't they a Behringer bass?
Well, I don't know.
Weren't they just like a rebranded Behringer bass or
Flea,
something like
No, it's Flea's company. It was his company. He just left it.
Yeah, he was doing like a affordable Basically,
he was unsuccessful at what Marcus Millers managed to do quite successfully.
Have you tried one of those Marcus Millers?
The Sires, yeah. A friend of mine bought them. Really good, like remarkably good.
Okay.
Hardware's great, sounds good, build quality's great, and they're sub £400. Best-selling bass on Toman's website at the moment.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the deal with that? Is it something that Marcus Miller has, or has Marcus Miller gone out and gone, you know what I want? I want to make a bass that's affordable. I'll go out and I will build this to my spec. Or is it someone industrious has gone out to China, put together, found a factory that will put together a load of bases, and then come back, gone to the US and gone and found Marcus Miller and be like, look, I've made these, they're really cheap, do you want to go halves in on this?
Actually, it's a bit of both.
Yeah,
is it? Right. They do a quite an open documentary on sort of what happened. Marcus Miller was looking, was aware and quite involved in sort of like kids learning to play bass and getting involved in music, and of course his signature model, his very signature model, is a sort of £800-900 bass, not very accessible for kids getting into music.
Or the five string, which was three grand or something. Yeah.
So he was coming to the end of his contract with Fender, and he was looking to set something up like that. And at the same time, Sire approached him, asking him if he wanted to come on board with them, and he wanted to come on board with them on the agreement that they could work together to make an affordable,
like, version of his bass.
Which is exactly what they did. So, and nailed it. What an absolutely cracking instrument. They've just released a new vintage version of that with bound neck with block inlays and stuff.
Cool.
So, really cool, really cool. But back to this one, the new Flea Fender. So we'd think, considering the Flea bass, considering the modulus, that this is going to be very tacky, and, you know, just basically not
I mean,
very,
I've got something to say about this, but carry on.
So wrong. It's based on Flea's actual jazz bass, which is a 61 jazz bass that he was given by a fan, unfortunately a fan of the Chili Peppers rather than a fan of the amazing band that is Atoms for Peace, but it is a 61 jazz bass, so concentric pop controls. He's gone for, it's relic, so it's road worn, because it's Mexican, it's road worn.
Oh, they're Mexican, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't know that. Okay.
So here's the best bit: road worn, concentric controls, 61 style, all these things that are amazing. What could make it better than that? Matt Knight, what could make it better than that?
Perhaps the colour, Joe.
What colour do you think they went for, Matt Knight?
They went for faded shell pink.
Faded shell pink.
Maybe I'll buy the bass. Maybe I will buy this bass and it will be the start of my bass career.
Well, there you go, exactly. So, the Flea signature model is a very tastefully relict, very tastefully road worn, faded shell pink, 61 concentric controlled jazz bass with a torque guard. That is the best thing ever. Like, it's the sort of thing I would actually go to the custom shop for, and it is now available for £850.
This is all fine
with a gig bag. No,
it all sounds,
I know what
great,
you're going to say,
but they could have just left it at that. But because Flea is Flea,
would you rather it was a signature on the headstock?
No, definitely not. I mean,
there you go.
So basically, on the neck plate of this bass is a kind of inlay that is like scrawled in really
scratched,
bad writing.
It's supposed to look like it's been scratched.
Flea
in.
And it's got like a smiley face,
a picture of some teeth.
Yes. It looks horrendous.
That's your signature. Okay, you can change a neck plate. You can change a neck plate.
But just
if
leave
it was a signature on a headstock, it would have ruined it.
Put it on the back of the head. No, in fact, don't put it anywhere.
No, don't
on
put it,
it
anywhere.
Just leave it.
No, but it's a signature model. They've got to put it somewhere.
No, they don't.
Do they?
Well, they normally do.
On the front.
Yeah, just right on the scrawled of Flea. Right on the front of the bass.
Well, it's not as bad as when Sting had it done on the 12th fret in a Pearl block inlay.
Classic. The Ramones one's really good.
The DD.
It's not a real signature. It's not a real signature.
DD Ramone was great.
He has nothing to do with it, therefore it's not a real signature.
Yeah, the estate of DD Ramone did. Had the Ramones logo on the back plate. What could be better than that?
That's
super cool.
Rubbish.
Are there any signature models that don't ever draw attention to the fact that they're not signature models? Like,
How about the Steve Harris signature jazz bass?
Yeah,
with
the West Ham logo on it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was very much drawing attention.
Seriously, that's a
Matt Freeman went for
It says it's got some sort of signature.
It's got it on the back of the headstock.
Yeah, but I just like
Is there anything that doesn't say signature model at all?
I mean, do you
it?
Remember Matt Freeman's Dean, his signature Dean bass that said which said Freeman in like sort of italic joined up writing the whole way down the fretboard in Perloid.
Oh man,
that actually exists. Yeah. Unbelievable.
What about the Johnny Marr?
The Johnny Marr has got the signature on the back.
Mm. I don't think anyone would put out a signature model without at least having it on the neck plate or the back of the headstock.
Like, what about the J-Mascus?
J-Mascus has got it on the back of the headstock.
Talking about ostentatious signature basses, Joe Branton, tell me about the Gretsch Tom Peterson signature basses.
Oh my God. Okay, so this is the best time ever.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I was really like, I saw about this after I'd seen the Fleet, which incidentally, I immediately contacted the Fender purchaser at the shop that I work at and asked him to order one in. So I will be purchasing.
Are you really going to get a Fleet bass?
100% buying one. I've already contacted the owner and let him know that I want to buy one. So
cool.
It's a faded shell pink 61 jazz bass.
Yeah,
this
of course.
Is everything
are
I've
you,
ever wanted.
Are you going to change the neck plate? That's the.
I don't care about that, so it's fine for me. It's fine for me. Anyway, so as if things could get any better than a faded shell pink 61 concentric stack pot jazz bass, Gretsch have released the Tom Peterson from Cheap Trick signature bass. Anyone who knows Cheap Trick knows that Tom Peterson's bass, because he's played this for some years, it's just that Gretsch are actually bringing it to the market. The bass that he plays is absolutely mental. It is a short scale, 12 string, semi hollow, white,
ridiculous.
Double cut,
what?
With gold hardware. 12 string. So 12 string meaning a 12 string bass, as in it's a 4 string bass with 2 octaves for each string. So for every string that you want to fret,
you're pushing down three strings.
On every one. So you've got to sort of claw your way around this short scale bass.
Do we know how it's tuned?
So it is just EADG.
Sure.
And then the two strings are both the same octave.
Okay, fine. So they're both an octave up.
Yes.
Are they? Where are they? Is it one on each side?
They're both below. Yeah.
Above.
So above. It goes. If you're looking down at the guitar, it's thick string, two thin strings.
And the way the headstock setup looks amazing because they've gone for like it's like a big bass tuner, and followed by two little guitar tuners each time. So sort of big gold tuner,
looks
two little tuners, big gold tuner, two little. The headstock is almost as long as the bass itself.
Is it
itself.
Like that Stig Peterson bass?
No, not quite, but it's not a million miles from it. But what a ridiculous thing to... Why are they making this? Like, how many people even listen to Cheap Trick anymore? Let alone
loads.
Want...
I think you're underestimating the power of the Cheap Trick. If you're a Cheap Trick fan, let us know in the...
They wrote that song Surrender, which is one of the best songs of all time. Like, genuinely one of the best songs of all time.
It is a great tune.
What's the geezer's name?
Rick Nielsen,
because he just had a... He had a Les Paul, didn't he?
Yes.
Remember we talked about it about 2 months ago.
Yep.
I can't remember what it is. But he had a Les Paul.
Yeah. That's the really is one of the other good things about Fender introducing a Flea signature bass, because that, along with the recent U2 jazz bass, some of the first times that Fender and Gretsch, who obviously they own, are stepping away from only giving signature models to punk bands.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, that they went through that period of Squire and Fender just doing punk signature models. And
yeah, like Chris Aitken from Strung Out.
So weird.
So weird.
Like, they are.
So weird. Worth mentioning, they are also doing a 4-string model. So if you like the look, they're doing just a regular 4-string. So if you want a nice short scale semi hollow Gretsch
double
bass
cut,
I mean it's a white gold, falcon basically bass isn't it? So
what more could you want?
There's a 4-string version for
I didn't see a price though, Matt.
It's going to be silly. I didn't see a price, but
yeah, I haven't seen it. It's going to be
a lot.
Fairly ridiculous,
basically.
Though.
Okay, so next up, more signature models coming from.
Oh, before you jump in, sorry, can I just? There's been some feedback from the Amplify forum that I don't know if this is anything to do with us, but the left channel is apparently quite a lot louder than the right. I don't know if that's anything to do
thought
with
about
us.
That. Yeah, that's probably why. Hang on, let's just turn that down a touch. Hello. Okay, cool. There we go. I think we should be even now. I hope that sorts things out. That seems cool. That's all
okay.
Good. Yeah,
cool.
All good.
Hopefully that sorts it out.
Indeed. So, next up, from Reverend.
Reverend, again. We keep mentioning these guys at the moment.
New, brand new model, the Jen Wassner, or Wassner, signature model. I'm not sure exactly how it's pronounced.
No.
So, Joe, you did a bit of digging into this, and I think, Matt, you've looked at it as well. Do you want to, Matt, do you want to tell us what it's all about?
Well, basically, if you thought faded shell pink was the best colour you're ever going to own on a guitar, you haven't had Optic Interruption as your finish.
It's even a good name for a colour.
I don't even know how to describe it. It's black and white checkers, stripes, and
it's like a strange
circles,
mix of like geometric
weird
shapes. Or do you remember the Eddie Van Halen Circles guitar that was kind of like this, but this is like even
more
full
intense.
On so who is Jen Wassner?
She's sort of, I can't remember the name of the band she's in, but she has
Flock of Dimes.
No that's not it.
Dungeness.
She's in a band called Y something.
She's in a few different
she's
bands,
in a few
actually.
things, but she also she plays session for the National, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
I mean, both the National guitarists are pretty wicked, so that's a pretty cool band to get to session with.
It's quite cool, though. The finish is, I was just reading here, the finish was designed by a textile artist who designs all the things she wears on stage.
Right.
So the guitar basically matches what she wears, so there you go.
Yeah,
I just think, like, if you get, like, it's one of those things I thought, if I got a signature, I would go, like, totally ridiculous. I mean, why not?
Well, I can answer the why not, because presumably you're getting a cut of the sales, and so you probably want to sell some.
Yeah. I think this will sell a lot. I think, for Jen Wassner's audience, I'd imagine, you know, it's probably a cool thing.
Right.
Reverend are also really on the up at the moment.
Totally.
What a great company. Yeah. I've loved everything they've done recently.
Totally. They just keep bringing out new cool stuff.
They're so bold,
it's because
though.
They're great.
Go on, sorry.
I was going to say, it's because they're doing this, the great thing about having the guitars built somewhere in a decent factory that's cheaper to produce instruments, but then still setting them up and QCing them in America rather than shipping them direct to dealers.
Yeah.
So the quality of the guitars are going through proper QC, both at the factory and at Reverend, but they're being produced somewhere where ultimately it's cheaper to make guitars.
Yeah.
So you're getting a guitar that effectively feels, sounds, and plays like something that should be twice the money, and these are like 700-800 quid.
Yeah, they're super impressive. I think we need to get some, basically, don't we? We need to do some demos
to them
and stuff.
Yeah, because they've got some cool controls, like, so you've got volume, tone, and then you've got bass contour as well. So if you want to tighten up the low end, and it kind of revoices the pickup, so you can go from like humbucker to like P90. On them, which is quite cool, and that's just all on a control, and that's sort of unique to those guitars. Not many people sort of put a circuit like that in. I suppose it's almost a reworking of like some of the Gretsch circuitry when you have like the mud switch and things like that. But you know, graphite nut, locking tuners, custom design pickups.
Such attention to detail for an $800
It's a lot of guitar for the money. And Fender scale length as well.
They remind me a bit of what was the last Leo Fender company?
G&L,
yeah.
Yeah, they've got a bit of a G&L vibe. I'm really into them. I think Reverend's definitely someone to look
and
out for.
I like the headstock.
Well, that's the G&L bit. It's very G&L, the headstock.
Yeah, it's sort of like when you've got a new guitar company or a newish guitar company, like, I think you could make the body any shape, but you've almost got to nail the headstock.
Yeah.
Like, the headstock's got to look right. If the headstock looks weird, the rest of the guitar will just look weird.
You see, like, some Fender copies, and you're like, that looks absolutely amazing. Like, the looks spot on, my exact spec, and then you see the headstock, and you're like, that is the worst-looking guitar I've ever
seen. Well, you mean like Sir, for example?
Well, Sir, I think, are a bit guilty of it. They make some great-looking guitars, and then I don't like the headstock.
The worst one is the... What is it? Tom Anderson?
No, not Tom Anderson.
No, James Tyler.
James Tyler. Oh. Yeah.
The ones they said he's so good, he put his name on the headstock 20 times.
Yeah, that is the worst headstock ever.
I'm also not a... I'm not a huge fan of...
You know
what?
That was quite funny.
Oh, okay.
I've totally lost my train of thought. No. Epiphone. I'm not a fan of the Epiphone headstock.
Yeah. The Les Paul headstock. Yeah, really ruins the Les Paul, doesn't it?
I think so. I've seen... I saw somewhere someone was... someone made like retrofit Gibson style
wings
horns
that
you could glue on the top.
I was thinking about getting one of the J. Bonamassa, the Inverness Green Les Pauls, because the neck is like a baseball bat on those things. It's actually
brilliant. Got Bigsby and stuff, haven't they?
Yeah, it's great for the money. It's unbelievable, but it's just that headstock is really even with the incredible neck, it's really off-putting.
Let's talk about some amp stuff. Supro 1600 Supreme. Matt Knight.
I want it.
I did a bit of... I put this up on the site, guitarnerds.net, talking about the release of this. So it's modelled on a kind of an amp famously used by the Rolling Stones. Have you got some spec?
Yeah. So 59 Supro, basically, in terms of its cosmetics and its circuitry. 25 watts Class A, 1x10 speaker, two 6V6s, and just the best control layout. Volume, tone. Which is kind of all you want, really. So you've got two inputs. One goes to basically puts one volume into another, into the tone, and one just gives you the second volume. So sort of like patching together an old Fender or an old Marshall or something like that, but it looks amazing. I was like, I bet it's like, I'd love to, like, I've watched the demo videos, but I'd love to play through one because I bet it sounds absolutely incredible.
Yeah, completely. It just sounded like pretty raucous. Like, I guess 110s always have that kind of sound. And you know, if you're talking about like classic Rolling Stones tone, it is pretty raucous. So
you've got enough clean headroom, but those 6V6s drive quite nicely. They're quite sort of rich, and they've got a lot of sort of bottom end to the actual valve, and then going through the 110 where you've got this kind of like mid-range sort of almost like boxy sort of quality that kind of gives you that really sort of vintage 60s sort of drive, I suppose.
Yeah I think that looks super cool, and you know, Supro, pretty much everything they've brought out since the relaunch has been impressive, really well built and great sounding. So next up, Digitech the Nautilla. I think that's how you pronounce it. Nautilla? Let's go with Nautilla.
I have no idea. It doesn't make any Nautilla sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense why they've made and released this pedal either.
What is it?
It's a flanger chorus.
Yeah. That's good.
That sounds like something you would absolutely love.
What? No, why?
You love
because
a
you
bass
love
chorus.
Flange and chorus.
No, I like vibrato and I like phaser.
Oh, that's why you've only got those two those two effects on your board, isn't it?
Mostly I have fuzzes.
Yeah. It's a combination chorus and flange, which are kind of the same effect anyway. They are. Joe Branton, sneering, but they come from the same place, chorus and flange.
Vibrato and chorus come from the same place.
Yes, no, they don't.
Yes, they do.
Listen,
yes,
well, they do. Matt Knight's about to explain why you're wrong.
Matt Knight, Boss, will tell you that the vibrato, the VB circuit and the chorus circuit are virtually the same.
Sorry, no, sorry, you're thinking of... I just need to ring a bell because the new school is in session. Go on, Matt.
Because you're thinking of the new CE2, where the vibrato circuit is different, where the VB2 is pitch-based vibrato, and chorus and flanger are time-based effects. They work on delay, not on pitch.
Ding, ding. School's out. So, Matt, do you want to tell us what's special about the Digitech Nautila?
Yes, because people who do like chorus or flanger, you can actually have four choruses or eight flanger voices simultaneously. Some would call it over the top.
That sounds a little full
on. So what is this, like the Cure in a pedal, or
it's like having four Cures in one pedal, because they love the chorus. So basically you can set I'm sort of having a little bit of a read. There's not many videos surfaced yet, but effectively you can set the voicing, and then you've got this kind of control that then drifts through all the voices, so you get this constant like morphing modulation basically. I just think that it's kind of cool because Digitech, I suppose in a way, are potentially like redesigning all the pedals they had out like 15 years ago.
All those rubbish pedals they had out 15 years ago, you mean?
The multi-chorus. Yeah, I think they've kind of gone, well, we sort of did it maybe a bit boring the first time, so now we're going to sort of go out and sort of do it a bit better this time. And actually, I prefer the design and the look on these, and they're a lot more rugged. And the ones that I've tried, the really popular one from the range recently has been the Polara Reverb.
Yeah.
It sounds way better than some of the other ones out there, things like the TC and stuff. It sounds way better, and it's great for ambient stuff as well.
Sorry, so way better than the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite a claim, isn't it? The Hall of Fame is like an industry standard.
Yeah, but, you know, just because it's industry standard doesn't mean it's the best one.
No, yeah, absolutely.
I just realised you made me feel very old, because when you said, oh, the ones that were out 15 years ago, I was thinking, oh, yeah, like the 80s. No. Literally, when I started working in a guitar shop, 2001. Oh man, that's depressing. Anyway, I'm talking about depressing. Do you want to hear the most metal sounding guitar pedal ever made?
This is genuinely that's true.
How about if I told you Seymour Duncan have just released a new pedal called the Killing Floor? That's metal, isn't it?
That's really metal.
It
sounds.
It sounds amazing. I watched the video demo from
way something called the Killing Floor sounds amazing.
No, it sound, the guy was plugging a telly into this and was basically playing Metallica, and he's like, yeah, a telly shouldn't really sound like this, but this pedal basically gives you those sounds from
we did that and got great reception, didn't
great
we?
Response from the old 51
Duncan's a killer.
Yeah, you should probably not use a telly for pedal demos if it's a metal pedal. But apparently this one sounds great, so we'll see.
Yeah, this is basically a redesigned Seymour Duncan pickup booster for people who like playing metal and high gain.
Okay.
So rather than just giving you volume boost, it gives you gain boost, and it's 30 dBs worth of boost as well, so gain and volume.
That's quite a lot of boost.
And then the three-way voice toggle basically is high-end boost or high-end cut or completely flat.
Okay.
So you can take the cut out for you when you're using a telly to take all the top end off, or if you're using particularly sort of high-output pickups and they can be a bit dark-sounding, you can add more brightness back in. So awesome for just going into the front end of a sort of fairly cranked amp, or just as a gain boost pedal on its own for any other drives that you've got on your pedal board. So yeah, it's kind of like the metal version of the pickup booster.
We've got about 10 minutes left on the podcast. Let's do a couple more bits of news, and then maybe Jeff, if there's any feedback from the
we've got some questions. If anybody else has any questions, please feel free to ask away. We've got a couple of questions, one from Matt, one from Rob,
Cool.
I've just refreshed the page, so you'll have to give me a minute.
Okay, cool. So let's do. Let's do a couple of new pedals. First up, the Pigtronics Philosopher's Tone Micro.
Oh, good lord!
One that we've talked about before in the Philosopher's Tone. It's always been kind of well regarded by the Guitar Nerds podcast. Is it the one that Billy Sheehan uses?
He used to use it. Yeah, he has. He has changed. He has his own signature.
Oh, he's got
model,
the EBS now.
He has the EBS.
He?
Yeah, but yeah. I said that. Yeah, the Pigtronics Philosopher's Tone. What a brilliant compressor, and what the grit function just makes it completely unique, and just everything you want. It's kind of a preamp and a compressor in a box.
So
brilliant pedal.
Matt Knight, what's the micro version bringing to the table?
It's basically, so the what I'd say now is the industry standard mini pedal size. What I liked about it is that it's got rid of the grit control, which some people would go, but that's a really good thing about it because you can blend the drive and the clean. But when I had one, that was the thing I used the least. And actually, what I want is something for super clean compression. And I think looking back on it now, what it's great for is people who do like ambient stuff with delays and reverbs, because it basically gives you infinite sustain or near infinite sustain without sounding overly squashed. So it's 9 to 18 volts, so you get tons of headroom. You've got the blend control on there between dry and compressed signal, but at maximum sustain, it's just like this almost kind of like violin, like infinite, you know, continuous note. And it's just brilliant if you're doing sort of stuff with delays and reverbs.
And also,
it works well for other things, you know, if you're doing country or, you know, you just want to kind of smooth out your pick attack. But it would work really well for someone who's losing a lot of ambient effects and stuff.
And also great if you are not using compression very often, because it means it's not taking up a huge amount of room on the pedal board. So if you use it for, you know, if you've got a country number or there's a song where you know you're normally using a pick, but this is finger picking. I almost said finger pucked. Then
finger pucked.
That'd be weird.
Well,
never get finger pucked.
I kind of think the other way around as well. For if you're like me and you always leave a compressor on.
Yeah.
Then actually you don't want it to take up loads of
room.
Totally.
Yeah. Let's do one other compressor, actually, along similar lines. Wampler have announced the Ego Compressor Mini. So Wampler's take on compression, again, in a small box. Do we know what... Because the Ego Compressor's become, again, a bit of a kind of industry go-to, really, something that people seem to really like. What's the micro bringing to the table?
I think basically they've managed to squeeze everything in the full size one into the mini size. So I don't think you've actually lost anything in this one. I think a couple of the controls have switched to micro switches, but for some reason this year Wampler seem to have less out there in marketing in terms of videos on other people's channels and stuff for kind of people to get some information about it. It seemed to be very secretive this year, because they've also said, we've got a new amp, but then we've not really told anyone about
it. Yeah, I saw some photos of it. It's kind of seemed like, I mean, unless I'm mistaken, it seemed like it doesn't even have a name or anything yet. I think it's like I think it was 30 watts. But that's all I could find out.
Maybe we should get him on the podcast and then he can tell us all about it.
Speaking of Brian Wampler, I was listening to Chasing Tone today. I was listening to the Wampler podcast.
Yeah.
And you talk about how he's not doing much. They're not doing much in the way of like marketing. He was saying how on the podcast, he was like, yeah, so, you know, sometimes I'm at a bar or whatever and I see someone using one of my pedals, and I go over to him and I say, I built that.
I like it.
And then he goes, well, I didn't build it, but like, I designed it.
Right.
And the other guy's like, oh, right, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I think maybe he's concentrating on like direct marketing.
More sort of face to face.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? Like, freaking out people.
Yeah.
Where's that crazy guy again?
I built that. Do you want to buy another one? That's what he's doing now. I'm into it.
Yeah, I think that's a good strategy. Plus, it means you get to go to the pub a lot.
I mean, that's the sort of marketing I'm into.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, one last thing. Alexander Pedals, Radical Reverse. Alexander Pedals are someone who we haven't really interacted with yet. We've not had any, not done any demos
free
or
stuff.
Anything like that. But well, yeah,
we've not had any free stuff.
They've not sent us anything to do demos on. But I keep seeing their stuff pop up all the time. So, Matt, tell us about the Radical Reverse. Yeah.
One thing I'd actually like to point out about them is that a portion of everything they sell, if I remember rightly, goes to charity.
Oh, nice.
Because the guy who... Yes, everything they sell goes to charity, and if you want it to go to a different charity, you just have to ask them.
Oh, so they're very nice.
They're a non-profit pedal company.
No, they are for profit, but they donate like a big portion to every pedal to charity, because the guy who designs the pedals, his brother died, and they donate loads of it to the charity.
What are the charities going to do with all these effect pedals?
You just get a portion of the pedal.
Of the effect pedal.
Just get one knob or the switch.
Some capacitors.
Yeah, yeah. No, they get money, Joe Branton.
Okay, so that's quite cool.
The Radical Reverse.
Yeah, so they have kind of just been like churning out pedals, and the guy who designs them is absolute genius. He does disaster area designs, which are kind of like MIDI controllers as well, and he does some sort of pretty radical MIDI controllers now. On their website, they list it as a CME exclusive, so I have no idea who CME are.
Chicago Music Exchange.
That's the one, Chicago Music Exchange.
What a
shock. Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool because it's their sort of digital delay, but it's got things like granular delay and a really awesome reverse delay on it. So adding to that kind of long list of delays that don't really do normal delay sounds, which seem to be one of the big things at the moment. There's so many people out there kind of, I think... Was it Maleko or Catlin Bread have got like the oil can delay and like the bicycle delay? There's all some sort of like weird and wonderful things out there. But this one sounds awesome because it's the granular delay is like connected to a sample and hold oscillator. So it basically makes every repeat completely different to the last one.
Okay.
So yeah, if you kind of want a delay where nothing ever sounds the same twice,
that's the one to go for.
I'm in. Yeah, sign me up.
That sounds good. Sounds cool. I'm going to have to check out some demos of that. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, we should contact them. Definitely. Free stuff, please.
Definitely. It's not about the free stuff, Matt. It's never about the free stuff.
I don't know. I do like doing demos on cool stuff that we wouldn't normally get to see.
Indeed.
I don't think anyone in the UK is doing these at the moment.
Not yet. Maybe we can help expose them to a wider audience. We'll see.
Yes.
Talking about free stuff, it is worth mentioning before we dive into some questions from the live chat. We are still giving away the Clisonic Lucid Fuzz over on the YouTube channel. So if you've not watched that demo already, there is a chance that you could win it. Just watch the video for details.
It could be you. It's still at my flat, plugged into my amp.
I know. Because you've got all the pedals there, which is dangerous. Because I know, I can just imagine coming around your house and you're like, that one's gone on a pedal board. Weird that you're crazy. Jay Cross, should we do some questions?
That was really frightfully bad.
Do it.
Questions.
Is that your Nigel Farage impression? Jay Cross, do some questions. These questions are coming live from the ampli.fi/guitar nerds chat. What's going on?
So we have had a few questions. There's one from Mike Rigby here, who I'm a little bit reluctant to say this because you will be like, oh yeah. So Mike just bought a Boss EH2. As he'd never seen one, and off the back of that, I watched the 5 rarest Boss pedal videos.
Well, there we go. You know.
So there we go. But what he wants to know is, excluding multi effects, is there anything that will do the Boss slow gear type sound?
Ooh, I don't know, Matt Knight. Yes. You're probably the man for this.
The Moore slow engine.
Oh yes, of course.
Because if you need a pedal that it no longer exists or is too expensive, you're guaranteed that Moore will make a copy of it.
Yes.
Yes, the Moore slow engine does exactly the same thing. And there's also a company, and I've forgotten their name, Diatone make one as well.
Okay.
But I don't actually know if that's on the cheaper side of things or not. I know that they're sort of... Diatone pedals. Yeah, I'll just quickly go on their website. This account has been suspended.
Sweet, classic. So we're saying firmly go for the Moore one in that case.
The slow engine, it does exactly the same thing because, you know, you could go out there and you could spend £400 on the Boss one secondhand, but believe me, do try it first because it won't be a glorious spend of £400.
Is that
unless you love owning old pedals?
That's going to be the next Wazacraft pedal, right? Is the
SG1W?
Really, I really want the Spectrum. Swells in your volume.
Yeah, yeah, which yeah, you can just
I have
do.
One of them.
Spectrum Wazacraft, yeah.
SP1W?
Yeah.
That'd be cool. I'll be into that.
Great.
Suggestions for new Boss Wazacraft pedals in the Facebook group, please.
ME50W.
ME50W, yeah.
HM2W.
I noticed that the That Pedal Show, who are a cool YouTube show, have been doing a series of videos on how to make the MT2 Metal Zone sound good. Yeah.
Okay. What are you talking about?
They actually, I mean, they don't sound
They sound great.
I thought it was funny, though. Did we talk about the Biffy Clyro rig rundown? Yeah. Did we mention that?
No.
And they're kind of like, they're talking to Simon Neil about his rig and everything, and they're like, so, you know, what pedals do you use? And he's like, well, I start off with this Boss Metal Zone, I actually go into two DD7s and then a Boss Metal Zone. They're like, delays before the distortion. He's like, yeah.
Classic.
That's
classic.
Right. It's a classic sounds
setup.
Much better.
Yeah, of course. Of
into a Marshall 90, into a 59 Plexi. That's his setup.
That's
two delay
so
pedals
weird.
into a Metal Zone. And
with
that's the same.
With a Strat.
With a Strat. And that's the same. Oh, and it also, they've unwired the neck and the middle. He only uses the bridge.
Of course. When you really want to go for that awesome tone, you go Strat, bridge pickup, two delays into the Metal Zone, into your amp. It's a classic. Jay Cross,
it's quite funny, really. It's just
listen. Let's take another question from the live chat.
So Rob 5150 wants to know.
That's a cool name.
Clean boost in front of or in the loop of an amp on the dirt channel.
I would say it depends on what you want to do with it. Again, Matt, I'll defer to you as our pedal expert.
I suppose it depends. Yeah, it depends what you want to do. If you want more volume in the loop, because it will come after the preamp, so after all the gain that you're adding, if you put it in front of your amp, it will push the preamp harder and it will give you more gain. So you won't necessarily get more volume, but you'll get a fatter lead sound, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. And if you wanted to just do a volume boost, I guess something like the Boss GE7 might be a good way to go.
I was talking to someone about that today, actually. GE7, keep all the EQ flat and just use the 20 dB of boost you've got.
Yeah. So it's just to boost the volume for solos.
Yeah. So well, that's the way to do it.
GE7.
Put it in the loop.
Yeah.
GE7.
Have you got time for one? We've got time. Is there one last question?
Well, yeah, but it's quite a good one.
Okay.
I feel like we could probably do an entire podcast on this. Bomb Deluxe wants to know, if you were Orange and you were replacing the Tiny Terror series, what would you make?
That's the topic for next week's podcast.
So, because we did talk about maybe doing a video on that, didn't we? So,
yeah.
But maybe we hold back and we do that next week.
We can do that next week.
Because that might need a bit more than.
Who's that? Bomb Deluxe.
Bomb Deluxe.
Bomb
yeah,
Deluxe.
That's right.
Make sure you're around next Tuesday at the same time and ask us that question again. Because I'd quite like to talk about that as a topic. I think.
I think that'd be really good.
Super cool.
One thing we didn't mention, maybe we can talk about it in the podcast as a quick thing, the Converse Wah shoe.
Oh man, I thought it was a joke.
Let's talk about
it. It's real. Jay Maskus is doing the video for it.
Okay, so this is a good time to wind up. Thanks if you joined us on the live stream this week. What we're going to do now is head over and record a Patreon podcast, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week. And we just had a couple of spots open up on our top tier, which is $10 a month, and means that you're one of our executive backers, our executive producers of the show, and means you get your name read out every week like this.
Tony Blair Toms, Andrew Marco, Mark Cross, Mark Rice, J.D. Short, David Carroll, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Eric Siri, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Will Glass, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anstis, Moo, Gravett, Colin Anderson.
Why did you read them out quickly? Less value for money, I feel.
Really? Do you want me to do it again?
No, it's fine. But just, you know, learn
Blair
for next time.
Toms.
You also said Tony Blair Toms.
I did.
Why did she do that? Blair, if you're listening, I apologise for Joe Branton's behaviour. But so thanks to everyone who's on that top tier for supporting us. It's really helping us do things like, you know, do live streams and buy equipment so that we can do this kind of thing and just make Guitar Nerd a more fun, again, I almost said funner, a more fun experience all around. And like I said, we've got a couple of spots open up. So if you want to be on that super cool dudes list at the end of the podcast,
be part of a deep spiritual experience.
Patreon.com/guitar nerds
with me.
So, and you'll also get this week, we're going to do a Patreon episode where we talk about Jay Cross's gig and why he was so red faced at the beginning of this episode.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about what Orange will do with the Tiny Terror.
No, we'll do that next week.
No, we should do that in the Patreon because I want to talk about it at length.
Okay.
I think that'd be good.
We've got loads of questions as well.
We've got loads of stuff to do.
Just before we sign off, yes. I'd just like to say that there was, after me bringing up, are there any signatures that don't have any reference to any sort of signature on it? Yeah. Apparently the Gilmore doesn't.
You're right, David Gilmore does not, but it does come in a case.
It does come in a case. With a book. Yeah, shout out to Matt Mork and Alex Chapman, who both called me out on that. So good.
What about
guys?
the Armstrong thing?
Armstrong.
Tim Armstrong. Tim Armstrong. That's, Hellcat.
That's got stuff all over it.
The acoustic.
Yeah, every fret is the Hellcat logo. anyway, so thanks for joining us this week. If you want to get involved, as always, do head over to the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Make sure you go to ampli.fi/guitar nerds and sign up for notifications for when we go live. Not only are we going to be doing this every week, but there's some talk about Matt doing some stuff from home, doing some kind of pedal demos and stuff live, and you can chat to him. We haven't sorted that out yet, but that's all coming. You can follow us on Twitter @GuitarNerds, Instagram @GuitarNerds. Go to the site because we're putting up all the news in text and picture form from SummerNam, guitarnerds.net. Don't forget to donate on Amplify. That's keeping this thing running. Follow us all individually @Mark_Random, @Matt_Nightsy, @JAYBN1 and @Joseph_900 on the Twitter and probably the Instagram for all of us as well, but mainly follow Guitar Nerds on Instagram. That's it for this week. Have a good week. We'll see you soon.
Farewell.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Good luck. Bye. Au revoir. Adios, as they would say in countries we're no longer affiliated with.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.